thank you so much for joining me. Andy Brotherham of Bellwether Education Consultants, right? Education Consultants.
Yeah, Bellwether. We dropped, everyone has to tighten their belt from time to time. So a couple of years ago, we stopped being Bellwether Education Partners and just became Bellwether.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's about 115 of us, and it was confusing people. They thought maybe it was just like the partners or the original partners. And so so now we're just plain old Bellwether.
Well, thank you for joining me again on the Show Me Institute podcast. I really wanted to talk to you this morning because I've been working in Missouri to try to raise the awareness around this topic that Missouri has an accreditation system where districts are fully accredited, partially accredited, or unaccredited. We have 520 districts, 514 fully accredited. So I've been trying to say to folks for a long time, if everyone gets an A, it's not a grading system. And I believe in 1965, when the Elementary Secondary Education Act was originally passed, the federal requirement was for meaningful differentiation between schools and districts. And I don't think we're hitting it. And I know that we're not the only state. We continue to have only 6 out of 520 partially accredited, no unaccredited. And apparently, I was reading recently, Virginia's got a similar system, which I didn't realize. And you, being on the Virginia Board of Education, are part of the group that's trying to change that. So what are you trying to do, and why do you think it needs to be done?
Sure. And I love the callback to to ESEA. I think something that's changed over the years, I don't think people realize, one of my political heroes is Bobby Kennedy. I guess these days you got to specify Bobby Kennedy, like the former attorney general and senator who was tragically killed in 68. I'm less of a fan of the version 2.0. You got to specify that now. Bobby Kennedy was just tremendous on this, and ESEA, some of the sort of civil rights things were embedded in that, his fight to make sure that we were actually assessing kids so we could see if this was making a difference and so forth. Like, you go back and you read like some of those debates that happened in the Senate, and then you compare it to the way the education debates of today, and it's not necessarily a flattering comparison. So anyway, I love that callback. We could go down the Bobby Kennedy education policy rabbit hole another time. Virginia has in place, we have a system of accrediting schools. We have not had an accountability system as a few other states. You mentioned Missouri, Arkansas would be another one. Arkansas has been, they just passed a very ambitious education reform package. So they're taking steps there. It doesn't meaningfully differentiate. And we've known that for a while, and people have called attention to that for a while, but it was hard to get traction. I think what really drove it home was the pandemic, where we had like the largest learning loss of anywhere in the country, according to NAEP. And yet, on the system that we use to rate schools, it barely budged. Nothing really changed. Still about 9 out of 10 schools. And I think that made people realize, okay, wait, actually something's up with this system. It's not just people saying it for whatever reason. There's actually a substantive problem here. And that is a big problem. It also, I don't think it meaningfully differentiates in terms of achievement gaps. And I think we've got to address that. Virginia has struggled over the years to talk about the gaps and be willing to lay that bare, and then do the things we need to do to start to address them. That shows up in a bunch of ways, and the system doesn't do that. And then it doesn't allow us to actually target support to schools that need it. And in fact, over the last few years, we've actually even had to return dollars to the federal government for school improvement because the system doesn't work. And I think most taxpayers would be surprised to hear at a time when we're having arguments about if we should spend more on schools that we're sending money back to Washington every year.
So if Virginia is a bit of a surrogate here for Missouri, you guys do similar things where you lump kids into a single group, right? Rather than break out by student group, we take low income students with disabilities, non-white students, as though there's somehow equity between these groups. We put them into a single group, so you don't really know how the groups are doing individually. We also lump college and career readiness as this big umbrella thing where they just throw in a bunch of things, so you can't really see if kids are college or career ready. And so according to the federal government, you don't have to report numbers for groups that are so small that you might be able to figure out who's in that group, but we use the biggest one there. We use a group of 30,
Right.
you could be using 20 or 10. So similar kind of approach where, in my opinion, it's like it's almost designed to not give you information.
Well, I mean, look, we're going through this in California, just to bring a different state in, where they've created this accountability system that's super confusing. And you even got civil rights groups out there who are like, wait, what is going on here? And you certainly have like a lot of groups like parent groups and education advocacy kinds of groups calling attention to it. So, yeah, I mean, essentially, look, the core of these debates are sort of who should have power, who should have information, how that should flow. And traditionally, like the public school establishment had that information, they controlled how it flowed. And what, you know, a part of the push for reform over the last 30 years has been, how do we democratize that information? And that's like the, you know, the incredible work of like the data quality campaign and putting in these things, how do we report it and so forth. And look, one thing I'll say Virginia is very good at, you can go to the State Department website and you can find a ton of data. You can find like all kinds of stuff on schools and you know, descriptive information about them, performance information, outcomes, all of this. The problem is almost nobody does. It's buried. You have to be like a real power user. We don't just make this easily accessible to the average parent. And my sort of, you know, in my lizard brain, my basic take on this is like, you should be able to find, it should not be easier to find information about buying a washer, dryer, or refrigerator than it is about what's going on at your kid's school. And we do make it that way. It's hard to find that information and hard to figure it out. And then we've also got just some really kind of Virginia specific issues. So for example, we use a growth model that essentially counts any progress the same as a student passing the test. And so you end up with these discrepancies where you have schools where it's reporting that like 70 or 80% of the kids are passing, when in fact that number is like less than 50%, because it's what's called a combined rate. And so it doesn't let people, and this is going to be a political problem, I think, because when we actually start reporting honestly on what's going on, it is going to be jarring. And people tend to assume that like things are pretty good wherever they are, and that there's some parts of the state that maybe there's a problem. And like, I mean, I can tell you, like, so for example, like 6 in 10 African-American kids are below basic on NAEP in eighth grade, which is just, you know, a catastrophe, right? And those kids are not concentrated in just a few schools. You're going to find them across the state. That gets to the reporting issue you were talking about in terms of what kind of N size are we going to use to meaningfully report. And in the No Child Left Behind era, we used really huge N sizes that didn't capture. You'd have schools, you know, where 20% of the kids were African-American and they weren't showing up in the accountability system, which to me is unconscionable. So we're going to have to, when we start to report this honestly, I think it's going to be a little bit of a jarring moment, and it's going to be important that, like, you know, people talk about that accurately and so forth. And you know, there's always a lot of confusion and sometimes misinformation around these education debates. Everything's pretty partisan right now. And that's going to be a real challenge. That's a challenge we faced in other states. But we're overdue to do it. We've got to just be transparent. And then I believe, and this you mentioned like early at the top, like some people think that like if you manage the information and manage the politics, that's how you maintain support for public schools. I think that's a flawed theory of action. I think the way you build and maintain support for the public schools is by being honest about the challenges, being serious about addressing them, expanding options within public education. And you essentially, that's how you build a system that is a provider of you know, not a provider of last resort for parents, but is a provider of first choice. And it's just, it's that laborious work. And then if you trying to fuzzy it up in any way, just doesn't, you know, it works against that over the long term.
Yeah, I liken it to looking at your checkbook or getting on the scale. You know, it's not pleasant for some people. It's not always pleasant. But not doing it doesn't make the problem go away. And I had Patricia Levesque on this podcast from the Foundation for Excellence in Education talking about Florida. And they were a leader in like going ahead and putting letter grades on schools and districts 30 years ago. And by doing that, and by saying kids don't have to stay in D and F schools for more than a certain amount of time, you know, they took the hard look in the mirror. They did the hard things. And in the beginning, it was very difficult for some schools and districts. But by sticking with it over time, they've improved their overall outcomes in that state dramatically compared to other states. by and continuing to raise the bars for what's an A, a B, or C. And in Missouri, the Show Me Institute have made a website. We put letter grades on schools and districts. And when I presented it one of the first times, we had protesters who said that that was racist because the lower grades are going to go to schools with higher concentrations of students of color. And I said, their parents know that they're not in good schools. This, you know, to pretend that they're okay, to me, is what's really wrong, right? So when we have Ferguson Florissant School District and 3% of the eighth graders are proficient in math, I'm sure the parents know it's not a good school, right? We need to say that. We need to not try to pretend. And yet that's a fully accredited district.
Yeah, I mean, I also, it's like, I'll use Virginia. I don't know how you can say on the one hand, 9 out of 10 schools are doing great. And then on the other hand, ask for a lot more money for the schools. I think part of like, and I am someone who thinks a lot of the schools in Virginia are underfunded and our finance system doesn't work very well. I reject this idea that you have to be on team accountability or team more equitable finance. Like I want to go to the meeting where we're talking about both of those things.
Yeah.
But if we're not leveling with people about where it is, we're saying like 9 out of 10 schools are doing fine. It kind of, the average person's like, so why do you need all this money? When in fact, like a lot of schools aren't doing okay. Finance is a piece of that. And so we can tie these things together. You mentioned Florida though. I mean, we're not going to do letter grades in Virginia. That's just politically not, but like, I do think you need some sort of summative thing to help parents understand what's going on, as well as a bunch of other data, and people are going to sort of wave the bloody shirt of letter grades, but you got to do something. And our challenge in Virginia that's interesting relative to Florida is just given our legal structure and constitutional structure, school choice is not really an option. And so we are going to have to figure out, what do you do to address persistently underperforming schools? How do you give parents options in a much more narrow lane of things? Because school choice won't be in that basket of solutions.
Why does school choice not work in Virginia?
Our constitution, so we can do things with federal dollars, and you can do some stuff with state dollars, but it's very difficult. And you know, the local dollars matter a lot. And so we are not going to get there through any kind of like sticks around choice. You're going to have to figure out like, what are the carrots and so forth. I mean, look, for the political context, we right now are the state board's authorizing what are called lab schools, which are basically university school district partnerships. And we are doing these with like community colleges and four-year schools, and that is considered privatization. There's a bunch of people who are like up in arms, and like, this is pretty modest stuff. And I think, you know, there's a disagreements about whether private schools should be able to participate, although like a number of the HBCUs in our state are private. So I think it's important that they are able to participate if they choose to. But in any event, like a lot of these are like UVA working with a public school district, or George Mason working with a public school. These are public universities, public school districts. It's like privatization. It's like, I mean, it's I don't even know like how to, it's, I guess ill-considered would be the polite way to say what, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And so, but that's the context we're operating in. And so that's going to be an interesting challenge is, okay, how do you, given what we know about school turnarounds and the evidence there and so forth, like, what do you do that's meaningful? The other thing we're doing that I want to call attention to, it kind of goes to Florida and so forth and some of the other examples. We are trying very hard. We want to link in this new accountability system, link it to actual things that matter to parents, to real outcomes. And so we want to, at the high school level, have it linked to meaningful credentials, whether those are sort of industry certifications, things for post-secondary, military. We're going to incorporate the ASVAB much more. Like, what are actual meaningful things for the next step in a young person's life, rather than just these arbitrary measures? And so, for example, like when you get into the nitty gritty, like we talk about AP, but what are actually scores on the AP that universities around Virginia are going to recognize and give credit for?
Yeah.
You know, so you're prepared there. What kind of industry certifications are actually, you know, preparing you for opportunity? Again, military. So you actually have a choice of paths in the armed services if you choose to go that route. And then, you know, at the middle school level, same thing. Things that are meaningful readiness criteria for high school for that next step. And then at elementary school, the same thing. And we are putting an emphasis on proficiency, which matters. That's what parents expect. They expect us to get their kids to a meaningful destination, not just sort of have them wandering around. And so we're doing all that, but we're trying to have that line of sight to what does this actually mean for somebody's life? So this is not like arbitrary, like just what we've decided is good enough, but is actually like, what do you actually need? I think it's an incredibly exciting opportunity. The challenge is it's hard work. It's challenging work. It's complicated in the best of circumstances. And it's especially challenging when you're in the middle of like this huge political fight and all the negative partisanship and all the rest of it makes it like excruciatingly difficult to get anything done.
So can you talk about that a little bit? Because our state board has a president who is out of term and has been for a while and hasn't been replaced. And in terms of leadership, I feel like when the last round of NAEP scores came out and the proficiency rates were pretty low, he said, hey, maybe we should not look at proficient. We should look at basic. Like he was, you know, so supportive of like the public education establishment in the state and so unwilling to work against them. How did the state board in Virginia become this body that's like leading reform?
Well, look, I'll be modest and I'm not an expert on Missouri, so I can't comment on your situation, or actually I haven't looked lately, like on the level of rigor around your standards. I do think people have to look like basic, proficient, you know, these things like, you know, I think everybody should be able to agree. And we had the commissioner of IES, Mark Schneider, come down and meet with the board and talked about, okay, look, below basic on NAEP, no one thinks that's okay. That's like functionally unprepared. He was like, look, there's a debate about proficient and where that's set. And people have argued about that for a long time. And, you know, reasonable points of view on all sides of that one. But like below basic. And so I feel like this is our problem in Virginia too. We have like these pass rates that are really low and we need to talk about those, not have a debate about whether or not like the advanced standards and so forth are, you know, are those meaningful for all kids or not. That's second order stuff. Like basic needs to be, it is not okay. And the standards there need to be higher.
When you get pushback or opposition, where does that come from? Does it come from the Department of Education? Does it come from the legislature?
No, the department's great, and the department, they're pros, right? I mean, they're fantastic civil servants who work hard, and there are people there for a long time. They've served Democratic administrations, they serve Republican administrations. They're excellent at what they do, and we're lucky. We're lucky to have them. No, look, I think there's a couple of things. One is like politics. I mean, like, and you're not, I guess you're not supposed to say that, but there's politics around this, and like the VEA, like they don't like anything we do. They're not particularly interested.
The teachers unions don't like the state board.
They would love the state board if we just, if all we did was badger the legislature to spend more money and didn't do anything on accountability or choice. Yeah. Then they'd be our biggest fans, but that's not what we're going to do. Parents in Virginia deserve options and they deserve transparency and a meaningful accountability system. And look, I mean, you go around the state, it's the classic situation you see everywhere. Go talk to teachers is different than what you hear from their professional representatives. Teachers get this. And the thing about teachers is good. They get the good and the bad. They get all the amazing things about our school system, which I don't think we talk about enough. And the people who show up and are just doing a great job by kids every day, often in challenging circumstances, sometimes more challenging than they ought to be. And teachers get that. And they also get where we're falling short on a bunch of things. Yeah. The establishment, I think inertia. We have these large countywide systems, right? And that creates a whole set of weird politics. And that's not going to change. That's just a reality. And so there's lots of, and then I think you get some like, you know, there's just some disagreement. We still have some people who really think the best thing for the public schools is kind of leave them alone to their own devices. And I'm someone who's like, look, there's no large system. We don't talk about any other system like that. We don't talk about that. That's not how we talk about policing. It's not how we talk about healthcare. It's not how we talk about banking. Like all large systems need a degree of regulation and accountability, and we should be thoughtful. We should be thoughtful about how we do that. But education's there's not in those ways. There's things I think about education that are exceptional. That's why I work in the field. But there's like, in those sort of core ways, in terms of sort of human behavior and incentives and all that, education is not different than any other field, and we have to approach it that way.
So your new system that you guys are trying to put in place, will it meaningfully differentiate between schools and districts? Will you have Unaccredited, partially accredited. Well, that
meaningfully differentiate is one of our key things that we're talking about. And we've had people, and we've been working on this for a couple of years. So we've had people come in, you know, Excel and Ed's been in, you mentioned them. I mentioned that we had Mark Schneider. We've had a range of experts come in. Yeah, that's a core thing that you've got to meaningfully differentiate, but we want to meaningfully differentiate, you know, like in not in an arbitrary way. We're not looking to like just set up like a bell curve of schools. We want to have meaningful standards in terms of what it means to have kids prepared for the next step, and then have, and we've been seeing some early data on this. We have, I mean, this is the quality we're getting. Ann Hyslop and Chad Alderman, you know, are both sort of nationally known analysts. They are helping us design the system. So we've got just like, as consultants, we've got just like great talent involved supporting the department on this. And so, yeah, we're going to meaningfully differentiate, but we're going to not do it in an arbitrary way. We're going to do it with a line of sight towards what are things that kids need. And then there will be some differentiation because we have some schools that are absolutely, you know, really doing a fantastic job pretty much across the board. We've got some schools that are struggling in places, and we've got some schools that are struggling in a lot of places. And so that any kind of meaningful accountability system will differentiate them.
Yeah. And did you say that you're also considering revamping how you fund schools?
Yeah, I mean, look, as you and I record this, the state still doesn't have a budget, which is a little unusual. That's generally not the Virginia way. The legislature's coming back. You know, I don't know when this is going to post, but when we're recording, they're coming back in a week to address that. My understanding is that they want to do something. Their legislative analyst agency, we call it JLARC, put out a report last year that like laid out what people sort of know. The way we fund schools, it creates a number of problems. I'm someone who, I worry a lot less about what high spending districts are spending. What keeps me up at night is the inability of low spending districts. They can tax themselves to death and they still can't raise the money. That's the inequity. And that, like, you know, you have districts in up in Northern Virginia, for instance, that are basically, they're spending private school level dollars or more. And then you drive 90 minutes and you have districts. So I actually split my time between a rural community in the mountains and a community closer into the city. And the disparities there in terms of what they're able to spend, and not, you know, people think in terms of spending, if you work on school finance, you're thinking in terms of tax effort and assessed value per pupil and just the amount of property in certain parts of the state that we can assess, and with relatively little tax effort, the amount of money you can raise relative to other parts of the state. That's what we need to address. And the legislature, my understanding is they want to put together a commission to start to look at this, which I think would be a fantastic step. As I said, I'm on team, like, let's do both. Yeah. And I think sometimes the spending argument gets used as a reason not to, well, we'll do all these other great things once we fully fund the schools, which fully fund is, you know, that's like, that's a religious statement, not an empirical statement. No one can agree on what the hell that means, but like, I'm on team. Yeah. We got to spend differently than we have been. In some cases spend more. And we also need to accountability. Let's do both of those. But like the divides that we've seen, you know, for decades, those divides are still present. And the question is going to be, do we have leaders who are going to be willing to transcend those? Or are we going to sort of stay stuck in those same ruts?
What about your state superintendent of education? Is that what the title is in Virginia?
Yeah, so she's a state superintendent. We have kind of an interesting arrangement. So Lisa Kuhn.
Does she support this work?
Yeah. Lisa, okay. I mean, look, Lisa's background, she came from Tennessee. She was chief academic officer there. So like, she's like a teaching and learning person, yeah. Right? And so I think that gives her, I think, a healthy skepticism on like lots of stuff that swirls around in the reform world that's not necessarily tied to teaching and learning. So yeah, she has sort of, she runs the agency, is appointed by the governor. Appointed by the board. Okay. And then we also have a secretary of education who is Amy Gadara, who's, you know, well known to in national education circles. And Amy is appointed by the governor, oversees the entire education process. And the secretary also works then a lot on higher ed as well, which, you know, has been, you know, a fairly, you know, fairly live issue in Virginia the last couple of years.
It seems to me, I'd like to know your thoughts on this, like we're a quarter of a way through this century, which, you know, kind of blows my mind. I keep saying that, like picture 1925 compared to 1895, right? Like we keep talking about the 1990s, like it just happened. And we are like pretty far away from that. And then you throw in a global pandemic just as a disruption. And we're using financing systems for public education from the last century. We're using accountability systems often that were developed in the first part of the century around No Child Left Behind era, 2000 to 2005-ish. And we don't have, and I think our system of public education has changed pretty dramatically, especially in the last 5 years. And for what we're looking at going forward and AI and everything else. Like I just think that Missouri's finance systems from the early 2000s as well. And then we have this accountability system that we just kind of keep changing from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. Now we're on number 6. But I think it's a great opportunity or great timing to sort of throw these things out and start from scratch for something for the next 25 years, rather than sort of masking taping up what we have been using for the last few decades. What do you think? Especially Virginia, a lot of Virginia stuff nationally, but also a lot of Virginia stuff sort of came out of desegregation and some of those issues that were huge 50 years ago, but are not really the things facing children in schools today to the same, to the same degree of priority.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like, well, the segregation, like we're not formally trying to keep kids in and out of school, but I don't think we've like really addressed yet this issue of what happens to kids in school. And so we argue a lot on paper, is a school, how diverse is a school or not? We don't spend enough time thinking about what's actually happening to kids in those schools. Cause you can have schools that on paper look fantastic, that there's just all, you know, a diverse array of students being served in that school. But then you have to look and like, what are the outcomes and what kids are taking which courses? What does it look like? What does it look like in terms of discipline and things like that? And we don't do a good job yet on that. And that's why, so our advanced studies diploma, which is sort of our vanguard diploma, and people talk about it a lot, all the kids were earning it, but like enormous racial disparities, and people talk about that very little. And we need to talk about that. We don't have that the access to that diploma is not yet available equally around the state, and we need to, like, that gets to all these things. That's finance, that's also accountability. That's why I get very frustrated when we talk about one or the other. Yeah, it's both of those things. I guess like where I disagree with you a little bit is I don't know that we need to like throw everything out and start from scratch, but I do think we need to take a good hard look and be willing to make changes. And there's like a lot of inertial force around these things. And as you said, things have changed in sort of gradual trend-like ways, and then very abruptly with the pandemic in certain ways, in terms of different kinds of educational options that parents want and so forth. And I think we need to be responsive to all that, but I'm not a let's throw it all out. I worry education is a very faddish field, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I think there's like some of this stuff, like, look, we're doing, as a lot of states we're implementing, we're getting serious about reading and implement. We have a literacy act, and we've had some folks in the legislature who've just been tremendous leaders on that. The department's leading on that. As I mentioned, Lisa's, you know, an instructional person. So literacy matters, you know, a great deal to her. We're taking steps there. That research is decades old, right? And so like that's why I'm like, I don't know, we need to like throw everything out. I think you need to look at like what's going on. What are we doing? What are we not doing? And like what the accountability system needs to look like has changed as we think about. I mean, we did a lab school recently that's going to be in a rural part of Virginia, focusing on like Amazon certifications and things like that. Like that's not something you would have thought about, you know, 15, 10 years ago. But the idea that we need accountability, that's kind of an age old thing, right? Like certain aspects of this haven't, what should be in that accountability system, how we should think about the measures, that's evolved, but the idea that you need accountability hasn't. So I agree with you in part, but I dissent on the idea that we just totally need to start from scratch. I think we need to be thoughtful about what's working, what's not, and some stuff has just outlived its usefulness.
So when will you, what are the next steps for your new accountability system, or when will this roll out?
So the regulatory process in Virginia by design takes a little while. The state board can operate essentially with force of law. We don't, we can't supersede the legislature, obviously, or clearly the Constitution, but otherwise. So it's a laborious process, but I don't say that like that's a bad thing. It's by design. So it's out right now. There's been there was a set of listening sessions. There's now a set. There's a set of an additional set of listening sessions. Now we need to figure out some specific weights. The board at its work sessions is working on that. We're getting down to like the brass tacks of like what measures, how much they count for, and so forth. And then, you know, so we're hoping, you know, we'll be doing that this summer and through next year. We're hoping that that following school year, we'll be able to pilot something. And again, there's going to be a big change management point here. And I think something that Glenn Youngkin deserves credit for is, you know, you've worked in the sector for a long time. I have, like, often, you know, you get a governor comes in and what they want is to figure out what's the story I'm going to be able to tell in 4 years or 8 years. And how am I going to show that sort of hockey stick growth? And he deserves credit for being like, look, let's just put this in place. And we're going to kind of let the chip, like, he hasn't been put, there's no pressure to like, let's tell a happy story. And in fact, by what we're doing, it'll be very easy for someone who is, you know, someone who's disingenuous or tendentious to come along and be like, look, the schools, nothing's changed. They've gotten worse.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of stuff. You'll be able to tell that story because we're going to be reporting honestly. And so it's going to create the illusion that things are going the other way. And just as a politician, that's kind of an unnatural act. And one, I think he deserves some credit for, and it's going to set a baseline. It's going to set a baseline that we can build from for the future.
How much time do you put into this?
A good bit. I mean, our former board president, a guy named Dan Gecker, used to say this is the hardest working unpaid board in Virginia. And that is probably true. It's days every month. We're doing the lab schools, you know, I'm in and out of Richmond. Thankfully, I like Richmond, cause I'm in and out of there a fair amount. It's a lot, but look, it's a moment in time where we have an opportunity to get something done on education. I mean, I'm from Virginia. I was educated in the public schools through graduate school. I'm an enormous supporter, and I just think like when I see some of the outcomes that we have, particularly these achievement gaps and so forth, like I just find them completely unacceptable. And so like, yes, it takes time. It's time away from family. It's time away from work sometimes, but like, if something seems unacceptable to you, then what else are you going to do? Right. You gotta try to lean into it.
Well, it's great. I appreciate you coming and explaining it to us. You know, I press hard in Missouri, but I don't see the level of activism it could exist, and I just don't know about it, but I do appreciate it, and I'm following your work, and I appreciate you explaining it to us.
Well, sometime you need to have me down to Missouri. Sometime we can figure out, I'd be happy to come, we can go to a Cardinals game I'll give you advice. It'll be worth what you paid for it.
That's awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Andy.
You got it.